Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Deaf Dispatch podcast, where we repackage global development knowledge through conversation and debate to make them more accessible and relatable. My name is Cynthia Nyam, and while I usually work behind the scenes, today I am your host, and together with two expert guests, we'll be breaking down the report titled Conditions to Success in the Implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. I'll tell you about the report in a minute, but first, please meet our guests, Beru Lilako and Biruk Gemeda. I'll ask Beru to introduce himself, and then Biruk can go after.
Thank you, Cynthia, for the introduction. My name is Beru Lilako. I'm a trade policy analyst based in Nairobi, currently focusing on advisory towards the CFTA and the Africa Development Integration and Development within the East Africa region. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Thank you for the invitation. My name is Biruk Gemeda. I am a trade law and policy advisor here in Ethiopia, currently supporting the Ethiopian government and other stakeholders in the negotiation and implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Area Agreement. I have over a decade-long experience in practicing and studying trade law here in Ethiopia, and I also did my master's in international trade law in England, University of Sussex. So since I've been back, I've been working on the AfCFTA negotiation and implementation under GIZ program to support the AfCFTA. That's about it. Thank you.
Thank you both. And also thank you for making the time to be here. So a short summary of the report. It was published in 2020, the same year that African countries opened their markets under the Continental Free Trade Agreement. AUDA NEPAD commissioned this report from the Pardee Center for International Futures at the University of Denver to conduct this study as an important step in building a strong base of relevant knowledge and data to support member states' capacity and ability to implement the AfCFTA, especially with regards to policy and investment decisions. The report is in 30 pages and opens with a foreword from Dr. Ibrahim Mayaki, the Chief Executive Officer for AUDA NEPAD, and it continues into 8 chapters. The introductory chapter provides a quick overview of the report, and chapter 2 notes that the AfCFTA was established essentially to create a single market for goods and services to facilitate the free movement of persons and investments and to lay the foundation for a continental customs union. It emphasizes that the implementation of the AfCFTA relies heavily on the agreements between member states on the stated legal provisions. It presents the key outcomes of the research objectives, focusing on recommendations that entrench political will of African leaders as a key condition for success in implementation of the AfCFTA, as well as recommendations to amplify the benefits of the AfCFTA for continued success after implementation. Chapter 3 delves into ongoing continental transformations, including shifts in demographics, human capital, communication and energy technology, and industrialization. Chapter 4, which will be the focus of today's conversation with my expert guest, centers on the key conditions that are important in 2 stages of AfCFTA deployment. The first being initial implementation, and second being post-implementation. Factors put forward for successful implementation include political leadership, tariffs, harmonizing pre-existing multilateral free trade areas within RECS and the World Trade Organization, and monitoring and measuring AfCFTA for successful implementation. Chapter 5 and 6 present the methodology and limitations of the study, respectively, and Chapter 7 concludes with other calls for action. So over to my guests today. I would like to know from both of you, starting with you, Biruk, your first impressions of this report. Did you find it of value? Did you find that the recommendations were viable, given where we are today with the implementation of the AfCFTA?
Thank you, Cynthia. I think the report is really good overall, and I think we need more critical analysis of the AfCFTA implementation and maybe the status of negotiation as well. by articles like this. So I really do encourage other scholars, maybe researchers, they can look at trade issues from a different perspective. Yeah, you can look at it from a security side, from an economic side, sociological side, especially in Africa. So I think it's a good initiative, and I hope the focus on AFCFTA will continue. And overall, the paper really tries to address almost all the important issues or preconditions for the successful implementation of the AFCFTA. It's a huge topic to tackle, but I think the report gives too much, you know, focus on the political players and the states, and a little bit ignored the important role of the private sector in Africa that they can play in making the AFCFTA successful. The reason I say this is because no matter how much political will you have, and no matter how much focus like the state parties or political leaders give to the AFCFTA, at the end of the day, it's the private sector. It's traders, whether they are micro level, small level, or bigger level. It's going to be the businesswomen, businessmen that are going to do the actual trade. So what's the stake there? We need to examine what are the conditions for successful trade to happen, or at least meaningful trade to happen among African countries under the AFCFTA. And what is the private sector lacking, and what are the main challenges that the private sector is facing in order to be able to do that? I think I would like to see more maybe in the future in other papers. I would like to see more focus on the role of the private sector.
Thanks for that, Beruk. Beru, your first impressions of the report?
Thank you for that, Cynthia. Being the conditions for success in the implementation of the AFCFTA, first of all, you need to know that the main and major objective of the AFCFTA is to create a single market for goods and services within the continent. And this is basically which will be able to facilitate free movement of persons and investments to lay the foundation of a continental custom union, which is something the current 54 head of states which have already ratified the and sent the instruments for ratifications are pushing on the same. What I found to be intriguing within the report was basically it touched on number one was the success conditions for the implementation, which was more focused on the political leadership, and that is an important factor for each and every member state to be able to trade among us ourselves. We need to have political goodwill. Number two was in terms of the tariffs under the AFCFTA. Currently, we are having issues with the tariffs. And if I can give an example on the RECs, like within the different RECs, let's say COMESA, EAC, SADC, the tariff issue comes up each and every period. So the report also touched on the harmonization of the RECs and the WTO and highlights the best practice in terms of what can we copy from the WTO instrumental articles for us to be able to implement within the AFCFTA. So for me, I found that to be quite an important aspect. And also the monitoring and measuring of the AFCFTA for successful implementation. And again, just using the best practice in terms of if you use the rules of origin, which the negotiations are still currently ongoing, I believe so. And also the value add tax regime, which again, still ongoing in the negotiation. So for me, I think the private sector are the ones who will be spearheading the trading within country A to country B. And also it highlighted the success conditions for the AFCFTA post-implementation. And last but not least, the tariffs, which I've already spoken of in terms of the challenges, and also labor and capital. Here is something which I learned from the report that basically we cannot predict where and when and how these social frictions may occur, you know, in terms of the ratios of capital towards labor in one measure or the other, which indicate the degree to which the liberalization may be affected in terms of the readjustment of the different policy roles. So for me, we need more voices for the private sector. We need more voices for the young people. Thank you.
Thanks, Beru. I think you and Beruk are really converging on the lack of voice of private sector. So I think at some point, I'd like us to delve a bit more into that. And that also could be an additional success factor as we implement. My first question, given where we are today, if we look at political leadership, on the continent and political will, because that was one of the success conditions. I'd like to find out from both of you where you think we are, how strong you think the political will for the AfCFTA is. I know 55 of the AU member states have joined the AfCFTA. There is the Facilitated and Guided Trade Initiative that the AfCFTA Secretariat is piloting. We have all the various committees for each of the protocols, and we've completed negotiations now on the protocol on dispute settlements. So these are some of the signs of political leadership. But I'd like to find out from both of you, from your perspective, do we see them as strong enough and do we need more?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think before I just go into that, let me just maybe add some points into the previous question, which is looking at all recommendations of the paper that it laid out as the conditions for the success of the AfCFTA. One thing we should, I think, not and obviously know is that trade is a huge issue. It's a cross-sectional issue. It affects a lot of issues, politically, economically, socially. So you can look at it from a different perspective and say that for a free trade agreement to be successful, this and this and this must be fulfilled. So you can raise unlimited number of issues. But another important thing we should, I think, remember is that one factor affects the other. All the issues that are raised in this paper are not mutually exclusive. So one condition definitely affects the next one. And so when you raise one issue, you're also raising another. So taking that into consideration, another important factor that I wanted to mention but did not earlier is the issue of trade facilitation and finance. And that's a huge, huge precondition for the success of the AfCFTA, especially given that it is happening in Africa, where there is a lot of shortage of trade financing, whether it's to export to another African country or to Europe or Asia. One of the main reasons that businesses in Africa are not competitive is they're not financed well. And when you bring that to Africa, where you already have problem in infrastructure, digital economy, connectivity, you have problem in banking sectors, in transportation, logistics. This makes the need for trade finance even more important. I haven't seen that much focus given to the issue of financing trade. Trade finance is a huge, huge, huge precondition for success, especially if we want to see small, micro and medium scale businesses to be part of the AfCFTA, then it's a must, I think. Let me go back to your second question, which is political will, I think. There's no doubt that there's huge political commitment and political will shown to the AfCFTA so far. And it's mentioned in the paper as well. And as everybody says it, the speed at which the AfCFTA was signed, going back even since the preparations began in 2012 in South Africa, and then in Ethiopia as well, and the African Union headquarters, given that the AfCFTA is part of the Agenda 2063, and even after it was put up for signature, 54 countries signed the agreement, and that's a record in African history in terms of legal conventions, agreements that we have put up so far. Out of the 54 that signed the agreement, the AfCFTA needed 22 to become operational, and it got that 22 ratifications in less than a year. And that's, again, another record-breaking speed at which the agreement became operational. Even after that, we now have 46 ratifications of the agreement. And more importantly, I think majority of those, I think 39, I'm not sure about the exact number, but almost all of them have submitted their offers for goods, for trading in goods. And I think even more countries have submitted their offers to trade in services and goods combined than those ratified. So even those countries that have not ratified yet are submitting in their schedules of tariff, even though that's technically wrong. You cannot trade before ratifying it. But that shows you the eagerness that they have to partake in this trade mechanism or trade framework. So there is a huge political will, I think, from countries as well as from the private sector. The question is the awareness strong? And that's a huge question. I don't think that it is. And I hope that the AfCFTA Secretariat in Ghana, Accra, is strong enough, and I do believe it is, to address these issues. And I think if they are able to mobilize the support they have from countries, from development partners, and even from the private sector or from financing institutions, it is possible to kind of use this or capitalize on this political will and go for the stronger implementation of the agreement. For instance, yes, there is a huge political will for the AfCFTA, but if you look at, as Beru was saying earlier, the support for free movement of people in Africa, it's not comparable. Only maybe two or three countries have ratified the free movement protocol. Trade cannot happen, at least meaningfully, if you don't have people moving freely, just like the goods, from one African country to another country. And that's a huge problem right now. So you have issues with visas, you have issues with infrastructure, you have issues with harmonizing systems, immigration systems, we have issues with even transportation, logistics. So political will there is not high as the political will for the interest you see for AfCFTA. So that's what makes me concerned about the awareness about the AfCFTA. Do people really know what the AfCFTA is going to bring? It's going to bring a lot of people to your door. It's going to bring a lot of goods to your door. So we will see if this political will is going to hold up in the future or not.
And that's an important point you made there, Baruk, especially on the interconnectedness of the issues and as well as the sensitization. And it just reminded me, I think a few days ago, I read an article where the Kenyan government was surprised that it took 6 weeks for some goods to move from Kenya to Ghana, which then brings to light the issues of infrastructure, where there might be political will in terms of people aligning themselves with the agreement, but then in terms of creating the enabling environment for the implementation of agreement, I think that's the point that you're trying to make. Beru, do you want to add anything on the political will?
Yeah, sure. I do agree totally with Abiru. And I'd like to say, I do believe there's a huge political will. Because as of May 2022, there were already 54 signatories, of which 80% have deposited the instruments of ratification. And additionally, only one country, the Somali, has completed its domestic ratification, but not yet deposited their ratification. Eritrea is the only EU member state which has not yet signed the agreement. So that tends to show you that the political goodwill is there. And also, as you are aware, the AfCFTA entered into force in 2019, but the negotiations are still ongoing. Tariff concessions, rules of origin, specific commitments for 5 priority service sectors are still being finalized. 46 provisions of the schedules of tariff concessions offers have been submitted. 31 offers have been technically verified. The rules of origin for 88% of the tariff lines have been finalized. And the remaining tariff lines are primarily in clothing, textile, automotive, and tobacco sectors. And yes, there's some hurdles. And as Biru said, now when you are talking about the integration of goods and services, we have to remember we can't have trading of goods and services from country A to country B if there's no integration of human beings. Currently, the only countries in the continent which offer free visa travel towards the all African visitors, it's only 3 countries. That's Gambia, Benin, and Seychelles. And as you said earlier, Cynthia, from the example of Kenya exporting some goods, I think, to our tea, it took 6 weeks. I was among the few people who was like, what? How comes? Because actually that was the first shipment of tea from the east to the west. But now the challenge comes in the whole aspect of the transit. Many of the private sectors were suggesting we need to lower the time frame. I think baby steps, but I think we are heading there. Thank you.
What I'm hearing from you, Beru, is that given that we've started trading under the agreement, we're now able to see the issues that are arising. And it's a matter of then having that political will showing up now that these issues are arising and then looking at how our governments are responding to this, especially as it pertains to movement of people, as well as, you know, movement of the goods themselves. Maybe we switch gears. I was thinking to tariffs, which is another huge condition of success. Given that the AfCFTA is expected to remove 90% of tariffs on trade on the continent, and when you look at that from the perspective that there are countries whose revenue is dependent on intra-African trade, so those countries are going to suffer. The analysis says the negative impact is going to be in the short term, but with the increase in trade, then things should begin to stabilize. What are your thoughts on that, especially as we are going into the actual implementation? What are your thoughts on how African countries can come together and support each other, keeping in mind that there are countries that will be facing negative shocks in the immediate term. How do governments explain this to their citizens in a way that they can understand? And is this analysis actually true?
I think the overall analysis of the paper on the issue, I think, is correct. And I agree with it. One thing I think about tiles that you have two different sides of argument. So you hear some say, oh, intra-Africa trade is low. It's one of the lowest in the world. Intra-Africa is very low compared to intra-Asia trade or intra-Europe trade. It's maybe around 12%. It's the lowest. And because intra-Africa trade is low, the amount of revenue governments get from tariff from intra-Africa trade is automatically lower. So because that's low, when the AfCFTA becomes operational, then you face no challenge with regards to this loss of revenue and economic shocks, where all of a sudden states find themselves with empty pockets. That's not going to be the case in AfCFTA. But others also say, I'm not an economist, but other economists also argue that because the AfCFTA, so let's assume, for instance, Ethiopia is, I think, one of the few countries in the world that's highly dependent on external revenue for government income from tariff. So even though our intra-Africa trade level is low, the government is heavily dependent, some say even up to 50% of its revenue is from tariffs from like goods coming from China, from Europe, from US. Yeah. So when the AfCFTA becomes operational, there's nothing that's going to prevent Chinese companies or European companies or US companies from relocating to one of the 54 countries that signed the AfCFTA. So as soon as they relocate and shift their manufacturing to Africa, then they can export to the rest of Africa without tariff. And one good example for this is the automotive industry. So Ethiopia has one of the highest tariffs on imports of vehicles. Pay up to 300, 400, sometimes 500% tariff. The luxurious the car, the higher the tariffs. And let's say currently we import a huge chunk of our automotive from China, from maybe the Middle East, and from Europe. So there's nothing that's going to prevent Toyota from relocating to South Africa or Egypt and assembling or manufacturing there and sending it to Ethiopia. Now, all of a sudden, nobody's going to import car in Ethiopia from Europe. So indirectly, the AfCFTA is going to reduce the revenue of the government dramatically. So even though it's not direct, what the paper did not address is indirectly even, the AfCFTA is going to reduce the revenue that African states get from intra-Africa trade or even trade with other countries because of shifts in manufacturing industries. So we need to give due attention to this and we need to prepare. And one mechanism to do is to prepare for a backup. So how are you going to support countries that are going to maybe suffer from this loss of revenue and how are you going to support them? And I think the AfCFTA Secretariat and the AU has already thought about this and there is a mechanism being put in place to support countries that might going to shock due to loss of revenue. But in the meantime, what the paper rightly says is those countries that are going to lose a lot from trade liberalization and tariff reduction are going to stand to benefit from the AfCFTA the most because the reason they lose a lot of revenue is because they have higher rate of intra-Africa trade. So when actually the AfCFTA becomes operational and it's implemented, they're going to stand to benefit in the long run because they already have higher trade rate with other African countries. So already the mechanism of maybe the solution has already been thought of and it's been worked on.
To just add on what Birol has commented, trade liberalization removes or reduces barriers to trade among countries, such as tariffs and quotas, and having fewer barriers to trade reduces the cost of goods sold in an importing countries, and that's very, very important. The removal of tariffs can change supply and demand relationships, and also in turn leading to changing production consumption patterns. According to me, 90% tariff liberalization might be quite a challenge. It looks possible, it looks doable, but it's like a long-term decision. As Biru said, let's look at other options. In the long run, to have an effective integration of trading amongst the 54 countries which have already signed and ratified, that's the way to go. In the short run, there will be hiccups, there will be challenges, but according to me, it is the way to go in the long term because the CFTA is not an event, it's a process.
Just wanted to mention, it's expected that there's going to be some revenue losses over the years, especially over the 10 years when you remove the 90% of your tariff lines. So I think it was the AFCFTA Secretariat and the Afreximbank Bank that signed an agreement for the management of the AFCFTA adjustment. It's called the AFCFTA Adjustment Place Fund, which basically is for the private sector as well, but mainly it's there to help countries cope with the loss of revenue in the short term and long term, either in terms of loan or just grant. So I just wanted to point that out.
Yeah, and also to add on that, I think the study which was conducted by COMESA, and it shows that tariff liberalization positively correlates with increase in NTBs and has observed that the tariff liberalization within COMESA and these 21 countries led to increase in non-tariff measures in the region that have stifled trade. So that's very important. So basically, going forward, African states will require to improve their governance, which is very important, reduce corruption, which has been on debate for a while, and also enhance monitoring measures across border. And this will enhance more of tracking of trade flows with improvement of data sharing agreements.
Thanks, Beru. While I have you, because this is an area where you do have a lot of expertise on, REX. So, yes, building blocks of regional integration, building blocks of the AFCFTA, but there are fundamental issues, obviously the overlap of membership, and the report even mentioned the tripartite free trade agreement now between EAC, SADC and COMESA. So how do these play into the implementation of the AFCFTA, contextualizing that to where we are today, the negotiations and that are going on? What's your perspective?
BRICS are not only economic building blocks for the African integration, they are also key EU partners in ensuring stability, peace and security. I'll give you an example of IGAD. It has been supporting the issues of peace, security within South Sudan, within also Eritrea. Now, the RECs also are crucial in the implementation of the Agenda 2063. And also their role in the CFTA is essential. The aspect of overlapping, if you look at all the RECs, there's much of economic integration. There's goodwill for economic integration, but there's not much goodwill in terms of human integration. I think it's ECOWAS. ECOWAS is among the few RECs which is doing well in terms of human integration. The EAC is not doing well in terms of integration because at the border of Kenya, Tanzania, Namanga, or Kenya, Uganda, Busia, you have the specific requirements documents, but you still have a challenge for you to access. So in terms of the overlapping membership, we can't have an effective integration of humans within the entire CFTA if it can't work within the RECs, because the building blocks, the overlapping happens because each and every member state looks at their interest, and they have to look at the interest of their citizens. For example, Kenya is in the EAC, Kenya is in IGAD, Kenya is part of COMESA. So if Kenya was probably wanted to join another regional economic block, it will have to look at the interest of the citizens. So yes, we are discouraging the aspect of overlapping membership because they're kind of confusing, but I don't think it's something which will be probably abolished anytime soon.
I think Beru went into it in very good depth, so there's nothing much to add to that. The paper also gives the due recognition for RECs and the really important building blocks of the AFCFTA, and they're going to continue being a test on whether the AFCFTA will be successful or not, because integration starts at the regional level first. And so we'll continue seeing overlapping memberships. It is an issue that's going to be rectified as we go along and as we start trading under the AFCFTA. Even if you look at the phase two negotiation issues like competition policy, intellectual property, in the competition policy, for instance, the AFCFTA intends to establish a continental competition body that regulates competition and mergers and acquisitions across the continent. But it recognizes that there are regional competition bodies, and for instance, like in COMESA, there's a COMESA Competition Commission, and in other RECs as well. One of the sticking points in the negotiation is, will this suggested continental competition regulatory body have mandate to regulate competition and mergers and acquisitions within one REC, or should it just focus on competition issues or trade issues that are intra-REC? So these are issues that are being negotiated in the phase two, but I think it will settle down in a way that is not going to compromise the autonomy of RICS. So I think the overall intent is to keep them as they are and build on their success.
Thanks for that, Beruk. I think it's a fair point that both of you are making, which is that as we implement and we see the kinks, then we start to look at the appropriate fixes and that creates minimal damage or negative effects at a regional level. Both of you have put forward three additional success factors. The first being how the private sector is positioned to support the implementation of the AfCFTA. The second being financing for trade as a critical success factor. And the third being sensitization on the AfCFTA. If you were before a policymaker, what advice would you give?
For me, I think they're actually intertwined because finance is a major issue. And towards implementing the trade within the continent, we need finances. We need the different government bodies to be able to finance this implementation. Sensitization towards the private sector and traders is important, and that can't happen if there's no finances. By sensitizing, I mean capacity buildings, holding a lot of probably seminars, workshops, trainings, just to be able to show people what are the merits and demerits of the CFTA. What advantage will the traders have when they're trading among us, their brothers and sisters from other African states, compared to them trading overseas?
If you were
also, I think,
policy, yeah,
you also mentioned movement of people, yeah, supporting
movement
the
movement of people. Yes, actually, that's another
that's
one.
Also,
that's also another one.
Yeah, I would definitely propose for more support in trade financing. Of course, when we say there needs to be a political will, there needs to be support for trade in the private sector. African nations, even before the modern borders, have been trading with each other for thousands of years in the past. So trade is a kind of a natural phenomenon. As long as humans produce, they tend to sell. From a policy maker side, it is looking at these natural tendencies to trade within Africa and kind of leaning in your hand and supporting where there is a potential for trade. For instance, right now, I'm hearing in the news about, I'm not sure about the exact context, but there are some farmers in Kenya right now who produced a surplus amount for whatever reason are not able to sell it in their internal market, and their agricultural products are going to waste. Where there is definitely a market for them in Sudan, in Ethiopia, in Djibouti, where there is a huge demand for those kinds of products. Of course, Ethiopia has its own potential to produce, and it is actually one of our exports in Africa, you know, vegetable products. But still, there is a serious need to finance producers and businesses and industries. First, not only to actually do the trade, but to be able to transform the products. Instead of just producing tomorrow, we can kind of finance industrialization, building the value chain. Actually, the paper touches this one and the last part with regards to trade complementarity. We need to do a lot there, and that needs a lot of financing, that needs a lot of support. So looking at the which country, which sector has the potential to export to another country, and how can we support that so that those countries with the potential to export a certain product can not only produce it, but also add value to it and export to where the demand is. That needs a serious financing, not only African countries, but also, I think, other development partners or financing institutions if they are serious about supporting Africa. According to my estimate, that's the most important factor. The next one would be making movement of people much easier than it is now.
I agree with you in terms of doing compatibility. For example, Kenya, we can't import everything. So we need to see what's our comparative advantage in this specific product or service. Is it vegetables? Is it flowers? Is it coffee? Then what can we pick from maybe another country? What can you pick if you go to maybe the ECOWAS region? Or what can you pick maybe if you go to SADC region? Then we do like trading among ourselves. So I agree, finance is important. And the finance comes with also now doing more of sensitizing. Let these traders and let these businesses be sensitized to know this and this is available. This and this can work out. And let me give an example. Like Kenya, we do import tea to Egypt. And just like a few months ago, we did the CFTA, realized, oh, by the way, the same tea can also be imported to, rather exported to Ghana. So it also brings wider market, and that only happens through sensitization and the integration of the private sector, which is important, because now they're the ones with the different business association bodies. They're the ones who accommodate these traders. They're the ones who give them this knowledge and intelligence in terms of to know this market is ripe for you guys to go and do your business there. And also, all of this can't again happen without movement of people.
I'm tempted to ask you guys one more question just because both of you really do work in the digital trade space and you have expertise there. I know that the negotiations for the protocol on digital trade is the third phase, but I thought I'd take this opportunity to ask both of you, what are your expectations from the negotiations for that protocol? And what is it that ideally you would like to see that protocol look like?
That's a big question, yeah?
I know.
Yeah. So one important thing to keep in mind, I'm sure you also know not that, is when you talk about e-commerce or digital trade, of course, besides the digital services trade, I'm talking about the digital trade in goods, like e-commerce. Most issues that affect regular trading goods are still going to affect the e-commerce, yeah? When we talk about e-commerce, so of course we get the e-commerce protocol might address issues with settlement of payment, African payment systems. How do you harmonize those? How do you harmonize the data privacy laws? How do you address all other issues that relate to e-commerce? But the biggest challenge still would be, how do you get then, okay, you've sold some good online from country A to country B, but then how do you actually move that good physically? Yeah, you still need the infrastructure. You still need to pass the customs procedure. You still need to pass the other barriers like PTP, sanitary and phytosanitary issues. And you still need to have a warehouse in the country where you export and where it's going to be exported to. We're going to need a huge human and logistical resources to kind of store goods in one country and take them to point B and store them again and distribute them then through whatever means that each country has. So it is a logistical nightmare. But I mean, the reason I mentioned this is because I tend to see people suggest e-commerce as a solution for Africa's problem. Oh, now we're doing trade online, so we don't need to worry about the logistics. We don't need to worry about the roads, transport. We don't need to worry about the corruption. We don't need to worry about the customs procedure. We still need to worry about all those things. We just made the payment system easier. So addressing the payment system and putting goods online and, you know, posting them there is not going to take away all the problems we're facing on conventional or traditional trade. So all these issues that we talk about in the FCFTA and the trading goods, you know, all these problems that we need to address for the successful trading goods is going to be present for the e-commerce as well. So let's deal with these issues first. And I think this will make digital trade easier as well. Of course, trading services is another issue. It's much easier, of course, and digitization will make things much, much easier. Integration maybe in the banking, finance, and other services sectors, it is going to make things easier. But we'll continue, we'll wait and see that. And I think for all the other issues, the payment settlement system is going to be the biggest issues. I know that the Afrexim Bank is trying a wonderful initiative, the Pan-African Payment System, which, I mean, if that's completed, it is going to make things much, much better. It is going to improve intra-Africa trade in significantly. And it is also going to, I think not remove, but at least reduce the problem of currency converting. So we will wait and see, but I think we need to take one step at a time.
I agree with you, Biru. And actually the PAFS, the Pan-African Payment Settlement System, was launched this year, January. And Africa currently has approximately 40, two currencies. And now you see, when we are having like a business conference for, let's say, Africa, Europe, or Africa, US, Africa, China, when you're going to these negotiations, to these business forums to do the B2B, we come with 42 different currencies. So yes, we do make deals, we do negotiations, but at the end of the day, we're the ones in the losing end. And I do believe it will be a problem for us, it will be a challenge rather for us to have a one single currency, definitely. So that's why I'm really happy for the Pan-African Payment Settlement System, which came into place just to be able to spearhead the same, you know. And the CFTA offers SMEs an alternative route to market their goods, especially those SMEs and entrepreneurs who were previously hindered by lack of connectivity, high transaction costs, information asymmetries, for them to be able to integrate into this single digital market, which will create economies of scale and opportunities to grow both local and regional economies. So the digital trade is a good thing. I believe the negotiations have already started on that. And as Bijwas said, yes, still we have to put on board the specific parameters. The aspect of digital trade is also helping in terms of harmonizing the system. Like at the border, why do I need to be checked if I'm like from border A to border B? These officials from this side, they check my goods and products. I have to give them my document. Then again, across ahead to the other side, the same process again applies. Why not we have an harmonized system? Why not we have an integrated harmonized system for both countries, so as once I'm done this, once I'm through with this, me moving to the next border, everything is seamless. So I think digital trade is coming to ensure efficiency and just making things seamless and effective. Going forward, we are looking at disruptive technologies such as artificial intelligence, robotics, blockchain, drones, the Internet of Things, big data, software-enabled industrial platforms that have great potential to impact economic development and create opportunities for innovation. New technologies can be given access to markets that were previously closed or removed through distortions in demand by giving customers direct access to products that were also previously controlled. With the rapid technology developments, it also create markets and new connected consumers with lower transactions costs and also reduction of information asymmetry, which is very, 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 very important. So yes, e-commerce and the use of digital platforms will afford the continent opportunity to diversify its exports market and also move into higher value-added production segments rather than just concentrating on the traditional exports. And I think that will be a really, really a great opportunity for the continent.
Besides the e-commerce protocol, the paper classifies the conditions as, you know, pre-implementation and after we start actually trading under the FCFTA. One other factor I think the paper does not deal with directly, but what I think it should have is on the successful enforcement of the rules of origin. And that's, I think, the most important protocol of all. And whether we have a good enforcement of the rules, whatever the rules that are going to be when the rules of origin protocol is finally concluded, the effective implementation of those rules is really important. If we are going to see countries, whether it's from Asia or Europe, just dumping a certain product in one country, and labeling that as made in Africa and then exporting to the rest of Africa, because AfCFTA creates huge market for industries, for Western investors. It just opens the door to a huge, huge market, 1.2 billion people. And this is a huge market, and it is the biggest market that's created by multilateral trading agreement outside the WTO. So is really critical that the rules of origin and is looked at critically. I think outside of the paper, yeah, looking at the bigger picture, the overall success of the AFCFTA depends on other issues, other external issues as well. Of course, the paper tries to look at more of internal continental issues, but there are other external players and other external factors that are really determinant to the success of the AFCFTA. One is the role of other countries or regions. For instance, the AFCFTA is supposed to create one African voices, one block of continental countries coming together to negotiate, you know, and hopefully will grow into a custom union where we will see in the future African countries having one common external tariff for goods coming outside of the continent. So that kind of progress can be undermined by bilateral agreements that African countries make on the side. For instance, we've seen attempts by the US, or even I think it's already signed by between a bilateral agreement between the US and Kenya, maybe, or the UK and another country, which can seriously undermine the success of the AFCFTA. So those member states that have ratified need to speak in one voice when it comes to engaging in other continental or global or other even bilateral or regional agreements outside of the continent. So we have to be careful not to undermine the AFCFTA. Another factor is, I think, the world is changing too fast. We've taken a lot of issues for granted when we got into the AFCFTA, for instance. One is one factor, energy. Yeah? Everyone took cheap energy for granted. Maybe energy is behind the success of EU or WTO or other even regional bilateral trade agreements. That's not given anymore. Energy is becoming more and more expensive by the day. And it has become strategic. It has always been actually a strategic good. So that also affects whether the AFCFTA is going to be successful or not. Unless goods sold under the AFCFTA are cheaper than imports from Europe or from Asia, and the only reason, or maybe the major reason they're going to be cheaper is because if we have a cheap energy, or at least cheaper energy, besides other factors, and if they're not going to be cheaper, at the end of the day, no matter how political will, no matter how smooth the trading is, the price is the final determining factor for the success of the AFCFTA. Goods sold in the AFCFTA needs to be cheaper, and that needs cheap energy, or at least cheaper than what we have now. And that's not, does not seem to be happening anytime soon, unless we come up with cheap renewable energy for Africa and for the world. That's another external factor. And obviously, the elephant in the room in Africa is peace and security. If we don't have sustained peace within African countries, within regions, and across the continent, if we're not successfully silence the guns, as the AU people say, then the AFCFTA will not materialize. I just want to caution that there are other external factors outside that we need to be looking at that will determine the success or the fate of the AFCFTA in general.
And also, just to add on that, I also hope the AFCFTA will be able to push towards the dispute settlement mechanism, because now by which will be able to administer dispute settlement body through the protocol on rules and also procedures on the settlement of disputes. Like you said, Biru, in terms of the free trade agreement between Kenya and the US, that matter is in court. And actually, it was taken to the East Africa Regional Court. The EAC is a custom. So when Kenya has this bilateral trade agreement with the US, without the other six members are now with Congo on board approval, it brings an aspect of disharmony, disunity within the REC. My prayer is once the CFTA has a custom union, I hope we won't be seeing such matters. And I do believe the dispute settlement will be able to spearhead this. And I think that's one of the things the CFTA has utilized within the WTO guidelines, such as the anti-dumping measures, the national treatment of goods and services regarding domestic and foreign providers. and also the investment or the facilitation of initiative, and also the digital trade initiative. So I think it's among the benchmarking towards the WTO of best practice. As I said, Alice, it's not an event, it's a process. It will take time. We will have some hurdles on the way. My prayer is we will be able to see the ease of human movement from one end to the other end without having restrictions. I know that will come with major issues and also government losing a lot of revenues, but I think it should be a good thing in the long term. So let's suffer in the short term, but in the long term, let's have that benefit towards the citizens because they're the major stakeholders.
Thank you for that, Beru. I think that would be concluding point for this session. Also, Biruk, thank you very much for your time, both of you for your time and also for your engagement and really for the conversation and giving us the opportunity really to learn from both of your expertise.
Thank you, Cynthia. And thank you, Beru. I enjoyed discussing with you. Hope we'll continue to discuss after.
So that brings us to the end of this episode of the Dev Dispatch podcast, where I have been hosting two expert guests on the AfCFTA, Beru Lilako and Biruk Gemeda, who have been discussing a publication by Awuda Neppert titled Conditions for Success in the Implementation of the African Continental Free Trade Agreement. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation and I hope you've learned something new. And do check out our other episodes on the AfCFTA. Goodbye.